At any rate, it is a sight to behold. A 40-year-old principal in a suit chasing a girl up the street. SRO, he's gone up and made the loop, and he's going to come down and meet us head on. And the security guy's trailing mom. And I'm on foot. When she rounds the corner onto Wakefield, about halfway, right about the time she would be turning, if she were going to go out, try to exit the subdivision, there's a group of probably five or six old men who have congregated at a mailbox, and I am sure that they are solving the world's problems and in a positive manner, and they do not realize they don't realize the folly that is about to unfold in front of them. So it's when she runs up the Wakefield, she realizes that she's got an audience. And so she begins screaming at the top of her lungs, "This cracker trying to rape me! This cracker trying to rape me!"
Breaking news, here we go. Teacher Taylor, start the show. Hear the stories that you know. Education in the flow. Teachers talk, headlights bright. Inside into overnight. Classroom buzz day and night. Stories that will feel so right. From the depths, music night. Every tale takes flight. Teacher tales in the light. Breaking news shining bright. Teacher talk, headlights bright. Inside into all the light. Classroom buzz day and night. Stories that will feel so right. From the desk news ignites. Every tale takes flight. Teacher tales in the light. Breaking news shining bright. Teachers talk, headlights bright. Insight into all the light. Classroom buzz day and night. Stories that will feel so right. Tune in now, don't be late. Teacher tales, ceiling fade. Breaking news here in a state. Hear the stories, educate.
Hello and welcome to the very first episode of Teacher Tales. I'm Glenn Bryant, your host, and I'm thrilled to have you join me on this journey. For those of you that don't know me, I've spent 30 years in education as a teacher, coach, and principal, and now I'm on a mission to inspire and support educators like you through this podcast. Teacher's Tales is all about celebrating the joys and challenges of teaching, whether you're a seasoned educator or just starting out. This podcast is a space where we can share our stories, ideas, and practical advice to help you thrive in your career. You see, teaching is more than just a job. It's a calling, a passion, and sometimes, let's be honest, a bit of a roller coaster ride. But that's what makes it so special, and that's why we're here. In each episode, we'll dive into different topics that matter to you as an educator, from classroom management tips to personal stories of triumphs and trials. Teacher's Tales is a place for honest conversations and real world insights. I'll be bringing in guest teachers, administrators, and some former students to share their perspectives and experiences. We'll laugh together, maybe even shed a few tears, but most importantly, we'll learn from each other. So why did I start this podcast? Well, after retiring from my role as a principal in education, I realized the need for connection and support among educators is greater than ever. You're out there making a difference in students' lives every day, and sometimes it can feel like no one really understands what it's like. That's why I created Teacher Tales, to remind you that you're not alone, to give you a sense of community where your voice matters. In every episode, we'll have a couple of different segments that'll appear on a recurring basis. One such segment will be story time. That's where I'll just share some either personal stories or stories that I've heard. I'll do my very best to give credit where credit's due. The people that tell the story, you'll notice, that I'll remove the student names and probably will call the little boys Johnny, even if their name was Johnny, and I'll call the little girl Susie, because those are boys and girls' names. Another segment that I'll do on a routine basis is called Prankster's Delight. That's where I'll share some pranks pulled either on me, like in today's episode, all the pranks will be about me or that were played on me or that I played on someone, including the consequences of those pranks, because sometimes there were consequences for playing those pranks. And then I'll share a leadership perspective in every episode, where I'll talk about just a tidbit about leadership and how school leadership has changed over the years, or how I or my guests have used their leadership in a positive manner. And finally, each episode will have a guest host, and I'll ask the guest host 7 or 8 questions and hopefully get a good long-form interview with that guest host. Unfortunately, today's episode, the guest host is me. So I'll be interviewing myself during the podcast today to get that out of the way, so that the 7 questions will be answered for everybody who wants to know the answer. Before we jump into our first story, I want to thank you for being here, for tuning in, and for the incredible work that you do as a teacher. This podcast is for you, and I hope it becomes a source of inspiration, motivation, and maybe even a little bit of fun in your day. So without further ado, let's dive into today's episode and start sharing some teacher tales. I'm so glad you're here with me, and I can't wait to see where this journey takes us.
Teacher tales we gather round, true or false we lose and found. Names are changed, we're here to share stories real and stories rare. It's story time, let's dive in deep. Fact or fiction, secrets keep. Teacher tales from days of yore. Come and listen, tell me more. Classes start and lessons flow. Funny tales and those who know. Educators' lives unfold. In our stories, truth be told. It's story time, let's dive in deep. Fact or fiction, secrets keep. Teacher tales from days of yore. Come and listen, tell me more. In every classroom there's a tale. From our funny some may fail. Gather round and take a seat. Time for stories so sweet. It's story time, let's dive in deep. Fact or fiction, secrets keep. Teacher tales from days of yore. Come and listen, tell me more.
Well, that song can only mean one thing. It's time for a story time on today's episode of Teacher Tales. I'll start today's story with a couple of funny things that happened to me over the course of the years. The first story I like to call, "He Didn't Hear Anything I Said." So little Johnny, it's my second year teaching, I guess it was, at East Lawrence High School. And little Johnny was a, I hate to have to describe him this way, but he was a lump. He sat on the front row. He did not... give any indication that he was paying attention, but he didn't give any indication that he wasn't paying attention either. He was just a lump. Now, here he was in a ninth grade. I think they called the course actually back in the day before all the emphasis was put on algebra. I think they called it general math. So the years 97 or 98 is before the new course of study had kicked in. And it's in a general math class. And so here's this, and I think he was 17 years old, sitting in a ninth grade math class, sitting on the front row just so that I could keep an eye on him and make sure that little Johnny was getting as much as he could. Well, on this particular day, and we've been in school probably 6 weeks or so, little Johnny is sitting on the front row, and he is dialed in on this particular day. Everywhere I go at the front of the room, he is paying, I mean, He is laser focused on me, and we're working some kind of simple problem. It's an area or a perimeter type problem. You know, it's something where we can involve a little bit of X and a little bit of Y. And so, at any rate, I have taught up a storm, and I know that I have an audience who is paying close attention. Little Johnny is focused. He is laser focused on me on this particular day. Every step, I mean, I cannot say how, it's almost creepy how close he's paying attention. His eyes are big. He's paying attention. He's perfectly still in every move that I make. So I take the opportunity. When I have an opportunity, I take the opportunity. I'm going to call on little Johnny and get an answer. So I wait till I get close to the end of the problem and I get it all solved down to a really, really, really simple, you know, all he has to do is some very simple math. And so when I said, okay, Johnny, here we go. We're down to the final answer. I've got 2 + 3 equals, and it was something simple, or 2 × 3. And that is, and I stop and I look at him and he goes, are you talking to me? Well, Johnny, yeah, I'm talking to you. Goodness gracious. It's been, you know, probably 5 or 6 minutes here. You've paid very close attention to everything I've said. So yes, I'm talking to you. He said, I'm sorry, Mr. Bryan. I ain't heard nothing you said. He said, did you know that my dad has a belt just like yours? Well, needless to say, he didn't hear nothing I said. Well, our next story this morning, a very similar story. Fast forward, 20 years or so, and I'm a principal at Ardmore High School. And this young man, I do not have any idea what he did to wind him up in my office, but he winds up in my office, and I am doing my thing. I am giving him the complete what for. I am proud of myself. I have really, really chastised this young man. And he's another one. He sat there and he has paid attention to me. He is laser focused on my, like, he is drilling a hole in my forehead. He is paying so much attention to me with my comments. And I've gone through the whole, you know, you misbehave in school, you wind up wanting to drop out, you want to drop out, you make $1 million less than if you do, than you do if you stay in school. And I really do think that at this point in time that I am getting through to him. I am making progress. I am making a difference. I'm making an eternal difference in this young man's life. And finally, I just, you know, after about 5 or 6 minutes of me just really getting on him really good and him nodding and him agreeing and him looking at me and his, again, eyes are about this wide and he is just paying really, really close attention to me. And so I say, well, do you have anything to say for your, you have anything you wanted to say? And he goes, I'm sorry, Mr. Bryant. Has anybody ever told you, I haven't heard anything that you said. I can't help it. Has anybody told you that you only have one eyebrow? So I said all that to say this, both stories. Sometimes You just got to take, sometimes they're really paying attention. And sometimes you just have to assume that they ain't heard nothing you said. And then our final story for today, for today's episode, is my all-time favorite student story. And it's self-deprecating. It's not flattering. It's not fun. It brings up traumatic memories. And in order for you to understand the story, you have to kind of understand the background. So let me set the background for you. I am the principal at Chapman Middle School in Huntsville, Alabama, and it's a turnaround school. It had been a failing school for a number of years. It has really not, it had underperformed. As a matter of fact, of 6 through 8 schools in the state of Alabama, it had been the lowest performing school in the state of Alabama for 3 consecutive years. When I went there, the students would learn, they knew more when they came in the 6th grade than they did when they left in the 8th grade, when I took over that school in 2012. Part of that was the students didn't have good learning behaviors, as you'll learn in this story. Part of it was poor leadership, and part of it was just an apathy that had set in, and that, no standards was perfectly acceptable. But this story today involves a particular 6th grade young lady, 11 years old. It took place in the fall of the year. We had been in school probably, and it was not, this was not the first year I was at Chapman. This was probably my second or third year, because by that point in time, the expectation was that you would, be in class and learn. And this child was having some difficult times. She really had some difficulty with learning behaviors. And so the pattern was that she would act out, she would get sent out, then she would get sent home, and she would harass folks along the way, to the point that it was, it was just a pattern that she had developed. Now, in order to understand the whole story, you have to kind of understand the demographics of Chapman Middle School. And I'm not saying this in a disparaging way. It's just the way it was. So Chapman Middle School was built in the 70s in a thriving middle class part of Huntsville at the time. There was a shoe plant over that way, and they had built all of these three bedroom, two bath houses right next to one another in that neighborhood, and it was solid upper middle class neighborhood in the 70s. Well, the shoe factory went away, but a lot of the residents didn't. So it was an urban city or urban part of town, but it was old. A lot of older folks and people just starting out so it was like starter homes for some folks, but most of the folks over there were 70 in their 70s and 80s. That had lived on the street. And the street, Chapman Middle School, is on Reuben Street. And Reuben Street is Reuben Avenue. And Reuben Avenue, Chapman is one of the streets that goes into Reuben from Maysville and Wakefield. But the school was pretty much secluded, cut off from the rest of the city by that subdivision. Well, I had being a newer principal, I had never lost a kid, and so I wasn't, this particular day wasn't going to be that day either. And I really bought into and believed in that you needed to dress the part. So every day I was a suit. I had on a suit and dress shoes every day when I went to work at Chapman, because I felt like I needed to. That's the image that I needed to portray. Well, at any rate, little Susie was having a really, really rough day. So she had wound up at probably 9 o'clock in the morning, maybe even earlier than that, in the assistant principal's office. And the assistant principal's office was one of those offices that had, two-part window for a wall. And so like the window, there was a window at the bottom and there was a window at the top, but it was like a fishbowl kind of scenario. Well, she was in the office, and the assistant principal was getting on her pretty good, and she decided she had all she wanted to of that, and so she went to cussing and carrying on and doing things that she knew would normally wind her up getting suspended. And so the assistant principal told her to have a seat. She didn't want to, so then she called the SRO. SRO comes up there, an altercation ensues between, or a verbal encounter ensues between the SRO and her, and she winds up cussing out the SRO, and he had very limited patience for that, and so he winds up putting her in handcuffs. In handcuffs, she decides that she's not going to do what she's supposed to do, and so she rolls out into the floor, and she kicks the bottom window out. She literally kicks a plate glass reinforced quarter-inch glass window. She just kicks it out into the hallway and escapes. And when she escapes, she comes running down the hall in handcuffs, and she comes into my office, and she just plops down, and she says, "You're going to have to do something about these folks. They've gone crazy." Well, I didn't know the story, you know, what all had gone on. And so I interview her for a minute, and then the assistant principal sees that she's gone into my office. It's like, "Hey, your problem now, not my problem. I hope you have a great day with that." And so she goes on about her business. She tells me what she's, you know, what's been going on. And so I have Susie, "I'm going to have to call Mom, and we're going to probably have to go from that." She said, I wouldn't do that if I were you." I said, "What?" She said, "I wouldn't call Mama if I were you." She said, "That ain't going to work out good for you." And I said, "Well, I don't understand. Why don't you want me to call Mom?" So at any rate, I tell her I'm going to call Mom. Now she calms down. I mean, way down. She was on an 8 or a 9 when she came into my office. She's now down on a 1 or a 2. She's real calm. She's real subdued. So I tell the SRO, I said, "You can go ahead and take those handcuffs off of her." Well, he objected a little bit. I said, "No, she'll be fine till Mom gets here." She goes, I ain't going with Mama. I ain't doing that." Well, now the school's set up at in Huntsville. We had SRO and I had security, and that was mostly to help with student transport, make sure that kids didn't, you know, just an extra set of hands. So at any rate, I call Mama, and Mama says that she'd be there. She was out and about anyway. She had to go pick up her other daughter from Lee High School, so she was out and about. And so when she comes down to the into the office, she had to come through the reception, parked in front of the school, come through the reception area, down the hall into my office. Well, you can smell this mother or this vehicle when mother arrives before you see the mother arrive. Now when I say that, I'm not passing judgment, but now when I say this car smoked, it was like a cloud arrived with this car. It was about a 1984, 85 Mitsubishi Galant. It had 4 different size tires on the automobile. I don't think it had been washed since, the early 80s or mid 80s anyway. And it was faded. The primary color on it was Bondo. And it was originally probably a blue or a gray, but you really couldn't tell what it was. So anyway, Mom arrives, and Mom, when she arrives, she's got a sister from Lee High School in tow, and Mom's in her pajamas. Now they have on matching flip flops or matching house shoes, but not. They don't each have on the pair. So like the daughter from Lee High School has on the right slipper and the mama has on the left slipper from a pair and vice versa. Mama's in her pajamas and sister is in some kind of something that looked like she would never have been allowed to leave the house to go to school in. But she's actually at probably been picked up or suspended from Lee High School, probably for dress code that particular morning. And to top it all off, her braids are too tight. Now, I don't know if I didn't know about black girls' hair when I went to be the principal at Chapman, but I learned about the African-American girls' hair And you can when you put those braids in, you can put them in too tight, and you loosen them by patting them. And so the sister's braids were too tight, and so she was patting her head, and loud. When I say loud, what they lacked in appearance, they made up for in volume. And so she walks into the door, Susie, rah, 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 you know, and just goes crazy. And she goes, "You called Mama, didn't you?" And I said, "Yes, Mama. You knew I called your mom." She said, "Well, I ain't going with her." And I said, "Well, we'll work that out." Well, you know, just really trying to kick the can down the road. And so at any rate, Mom comes into the office, and she's giving her the what for, and then Susie just up and leaves. She just stands up very abruptly, and she leaves. She starts at a walk, and then as I exit my office and follow her, she begins to jog, and she's running fast enough. Now, this, when I said she's 11 years old, but now she's not frail. I don't know that I would say that she was husky or obese, but she was not small. She was stocky young lady. And she runs out the front door. When she leaves the front door, she kind of hangs a left and goes toward Wakefield. Now, Wakefield is just like I described earlier. It's a street where there's probably 30, 35 houses on that street. All of them are built within 10 feet of one another, and they're probably all occupied by 75-year-old men or people that have lived there for 35 or 40 years. And so they are perfectly at home on. And so what is happening when she rounds the corner and she's jogging? Now you gotta understand the scenario, and it's probably 100, 125 yards down to Wakefield from the door. So 40 something year old white male, chasing an 11 year old, African-American female, and telling her to come back, and her so not complying at all. Again, I'd never lost a child up to that point, but today wasn't going to be the first. Now, Wakefield had an exit street. Cabinus is a street that's about halfway up Wakefield, and I knew that I had to stop her before she got to Cabinus. The SRO realizes what happens, and he exits, and he goes and gets in his automobile, and the security guy exits, and he comes out behind, and he leaves, but he's trailing the mother. The mother gets out and gets in her car, and the sister is in the car, and so here's this automobile smoking out of every orifice, and the four different sets of, at any rate, it is a sight to behold. A 40-year-old principal in a suit chasing a girl up the street. SRO, he's gone up and made the loop, and he's going to come down and meet us head on. And the security guy is trailing Mom. And I'm on foot. When she rounds the corner onto Wakefield, about halfway, right about the time she would be turning, if she were going to go out, try to exit the subdivision, there's a group of probably five or six old men who have congregated at a mailbox, and I am sure that they are solving the world's problems and in a positive manner, and they do not realize that street, I mean, that what the they don't realize the folly that is about to unfold in front of them. So it's when she runs up the Wakefield, she realizes that she's got an audience. And so she begins screaming at the top of her lungs, "This cracker trying to rape me! This cracker trying to rape me!" Well, I accelerate, but she does too. And she's faster than me. There's no way that I'm ever going to catch her. She's screaming. So you got to understand, I got an SRO coming down the road toward us. I got Mama screaming out the window, "Susie!" I got sister sitting up on the windowsill of the automobile, patting her braids, screaming, "Susie! Susie!" And I've got security behind them coming up the street, and he he is, I mean, and all of us, you know, really don't have any idea what's fixing to take place. At any rate, so she comes all the way up to, gets close enough to them, and then she gets to the intersection of cabinets. She goes across the street, and she stops literally under the cabinets Wakefield sign. She just stops dead still, and she's and she's waiting on me. Now, I come running up. I'm out of breath. I'm giving it all I got. She waits on me, and I catch up to her, and I run all the way up to her. Now, you have to understand something about me. Highly trained. So I spent 4 years in working as a prison guard at Limestone Correctional Facility. At that point, I had spent nearly 20 years in the U.S. Navy, and highly trained in hand-to-hand combat. Know what I'm supposed to do. Know what I'm not supposed to do. You know all the pressure point tactics. I know all of that. Can do all of that. I'm well versed. And why in the world I didn't revert to my training is beyond me. But I did what I would encourage every person in the world to never do. I reached out and I put my hand on her shoulder. Now, when I did, I know that the day was Tuesday, because Tuesday is the day that follows Monday. And on Monday nights, WWE Monday Night Raw comes on, and she had watched it. And when I reached my hand out to grab her, she, just like she had seen on Monday night, WWE Monday Night Raw, she takes my arm and she puts me in the perfect arm bar over her shoulder, and she tosses me over her head and down onto the ground, just like she had seen it done 100 times the night before on Monday night. And I hit the ground with every breath in my body, every ounce of air escaped from my body. And she's standing over me, and I'm thinking, I am about to die. And then it gets worse. Not only did she do the shoulder roll, she and execute it perfectly. She then did this flying suplex, and she came down on me, wham, elbow right in my sternum. And again, I thought I was going to die. Now, the SRO is laughing so hard that he is about to wet his britches. So there it is, principal on the ground, no breath left in him. SRO coming to the rescue, mama screaming at the top of her lungs at this child, sister sitting on the edge of her car, on the edge of the door, patting her braids, and my security guy laughing equally as hard. Now, I said all that to say this. She was arrested, and she did suffer some consequences for her actions. But it would have been much better if I had just left the chasing students to a professional. And now it's time for our interview. So our interview questions for today, and they will be for most of the podcast candidates, something along our podcast guests, will be something along this various. Question number one. What's the most memorable moment a student made you laugh, and how did that moment impact your teaching? My answer to that question is there are so many moments where I always had things going on in my classroom where, you know, I was not afraid to laugh. I actually told a joke of the day before joke of the day was even cool. Some of my students, when they come on the podcast, former students that are now teachers, they'll try to tell you that I would tell jokes that were probably not appropriate. But I did have a ton. And I'm sure that as the podcast continues, you'll get to hear some more of those. If you could give your younger teacher self one piece of advice, What would it be and why? So here's, this is a serious, you know, if I could give a younger teacher or my younger teacher self one piece of advice is get your master's degree early and get your EDS early before you spend, you're going to make more salary. It's going to open more doors. And the reason why that I say that is because if you think that that's in your future, if you think leadership is in your future, if you think that moving on to the next level is sometime going to be in your future, go ahead, don't delay, go ahead and do it and get it done early. Life will cloud and it will, what's the word I'm looking for? Life will creep in on you and it'll take your time away. And so while you're young, as early as you can get your master's degree and your EDS and leadership, that do that earlier, do that quicker. Don't delay. Don't wait. What's the craziest thing that you've done to keep your students engaged and did it work? So when I was, it's hard for me to pick a craziest because I've done so many crazy things. But I remember, and I loved middle school. Middle school was my favorite because every day was a new, every day was awesome. I mean, because when you're dealing with middle schoolers, every day is just phenomenal. When I was first or second year teacher, maybe even been student teaching, I created a rap called the ratio rap. I still remember the ratio rap. That is to this is to that. That's how you do the ratio rap, blah, 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 blah. And so I created the rap and I rapped it. I even brought in a beatbox and, did the whole thing. The second part of the question, did it work? Absolutely not. You can imagine it was so outside of my zone that, my comfort zone that it was not. I had to find different strategies to keep, because rapping was not my thing. The next question is, how do you stay motivated on those days when nothing seems to go right? Well, I would be foolish to say that you're not going to have those days when things don't go your way. I would say that my motivation on those days was just to remember that why I was doing what I was doing and that I was doing what I was supposed to be doing when I was supposed to be doing it. The other thing I would say is that I limited those days because every day was my best day. Now, if you ask me today, whatever day of the week it is, that's going to be the best that day of that week. So like if it's Monday, how are you doing today? I'm having the best Monday of the week. If it's Tuesday, I'm having the best Tuesday of the week. And I can say that with all honesty, because it's going to be the best of that week. And so if you do that over and over enough, it becomes part of your psyche. And then when things seem to go are going wrong and it's not your best day, you can know that it's still going to be the best day of that week, the best that day of that week. Anyway, can you share a time when a student success story reminded you why you became a teacher? Now, I could share thousands of these. I go back to a little Johnny that I had when I was at East Lawrence High School. I wound up getting in a lot of trouble over this little Johnny because I advocated for this little Johnny to quit school and join the military. And it was the best thing. It was the right thing for him to do. I don't know that everybody should quit school and join the military, but this child had so much going on that I advocated for him to quit school and join the military back in the day before you could while you could still do that. And it wound up being a great thing for him. I can tell thousands and thousands of stories where kids are dealing with things at school or at home or in school. Because of my upbringing, because of my background, because I have no way of relating to a kid that has a terrible home life. Yes, my parents divorced when I was 16 or 17 years old. But the things that our students, and especially if you're working in public school, the things that they deal with, You can find a reason to do what you do be a bright spot in a kid's life every single day. And I can think of thousands of times when knowing what that kid's going through and being able to put your hand on their shoulder and say, "Hey, I know you're having a tough time, and I know it's going to be okay. And I'm helping you by providing you with an education, exit that bad situation." Those are the times that make it most meaningful. What's the funniest misunderstanding or miscommunication you've ever had with a student? Probably the worst. I don't know if it was funny. It was not funny at the moment, but it was probably the worst. Was a young man named Richard that I assumed wanted to be called Dick. He explained to me in no uncertain terms that particular nickname was not something that he was going to, that he was not going to tolerate. So that's probably one of the funniest looking back on it, was that, you know, his classmates told me that Richard wanted to be called that, and I believed them, and I probably shouldn't. How do you inspire students who are struggling both academically and personally? That's a tough one, because you just have to be consistent. How did I do it? I tried to learn about the kid, about the student who was behind the academic student. And if you could figure out, you know, who you were dealing with, so many times, especially when, you know, like upper level math classes where math may not be their strongest thing, you just have to convince them that it's a necessary check in the box, and then let them know that it's going to be okay. I don't know that I ever really truly inspired anybody to do anything other than just believe in themselves and that they could do it. So the final question is probably my favorite. If teaching were a superhero job, what would your superpower be, and how would you use it in the classroom? So, you know, if teaching were a superhero job, I would say that laughter is my superpower. And I used it in the classroom all the time as a classroom teacher.
From the crowd. Quick schemes to play a game. Nothing ever stays the same. Pranksters running all around. Mischief hides in every sound. Pranksters teach to play a game. Nothing ever stays the same. Pranksters running all around. Mischief hides in every sound. It's never late, always ready for the fun. Pranksters on the run. Pranksters delight tonight. Laugh and scream in the light. Jokes and tricks taking flight. It's a prankster's delight.
Our prankster's delight segment today revolves around pranks that were played on me. Now, number one, I feel like that if a prank hurts somebody, it's not really funny. But there were several times, and most of these were from when I was at West Morgan. It seemed like the students at West Morgan they had a they had a knack. Now, the students at Ardmore, they were pretty good too. There were some pretty good senior pranks that were played on me at Ardmore that I thought were delightful. The year that they during the pandemic year, and they put the big for sale sign on the school, slightly used because we had been out of school. I thought that was absolutely hilarious. I mean, they painted probably a 20x20, sewed some bed sheets together and got a 20x20 sheet and hung it on the front of the school and for sale. And they put my cell number as the number to call if you wanted to buy to buy the school or to have the school shown. I thought that was absolutely hilarious. The year that they created a beach in front of the school, one of the parents had a dump truck, and he brought in a dump truck load of sand, and they shoveled it over probably 6-8 inches in front of the door, complete with beach chairs and all of that. That was pretty. It took us a minute to clean it up. Nobody was hurt. It was hilarious, I thought. But back to the kids at West Morgan while I was still in the classroom. All right, so there were a couple of pranks that actually, that I remember where I got absolutely fired up. I was mad when the outcome. So, as a coach, spring of the year, I was a soccer coach, prone to be out of my room sometimes when I probably should have been in my room, had a middle of the day planning time. So I would try to go get my field cut or do whatever I needed to line or do whatever I needed to do. And sometimes I would run a little late. So I would put a sign when I would leave the classroom. If I didn't think I was going to make it back in time, I would leave a sign on my door that said for the students to report to the gym. The coach would allow them to go in there for a few minutes until I got back, and so that they wouldn't be unsupervised. So I would put the sign on the door. Well, one particular day I had not gone to the field house and I had not put the sign on the door, but I had made the fatal mistake of leaving the sign hanging beside the door on the inside of the door. So student comes in, or one of the first kids from my, and I'm going to use third and fourth period. I don't remember if it was exactly third or fourth period, but it was middle of the day. It wasn't first or last period. Student sticks his hand in the door, finds the sign, puts the sign on the door so that students see it. And so I'm sitting in my classroom working at my desk, and the students all go to the gym. Tardy bell rings. Nobody comes to class. I go to looking for my kids. One of the last kids that had gone by took the sign with him to the gym. And so I didn't realize that that's what they'd done. So I probably 12 or 15 minutes, I went down to the football field looking for them. It dawned on me that they probably had gone to the gym. And that's where I found them. Got a little hot about that one. Not too bad. One of my favorites though, was when the students had a student, a little Johnny hid there was a set of cabinets on the far side of the wall, and they were not used for anything most days. So the student went into the cabinet and he hid inside the cabinet, locked himself in the cabinet. Then when I realized he was missing, I go looking for him. And so I look in the restrooms, and I call administration and let them know that I've, got a kid missing. And, some of the kids in the class joined in the search. And of course they all knew that he was in the cabinet. I looked for him for probably 12 or 15 minutes. Then I come back into my classroom, and having learned not to chase kids when I was at, I had not learned at that point in time. At any rate, he was sitting where he was supposed to be and acted as though he had been sitting there the whole time, and his classmates agreed with him, acted like he'd been there with him as well. And that one got a little bit busy with me. Then there were some other pranks that were a little less, they were less dramatic, but they were nonetheless where the students, nonetheless, they were funny, and they required a lot of teamwork on the part of the students. I appreciated those kinds of pranks. So we had a, you know, I taught high school math. And the kids in the class, and I would put my math book on my teacher's book right there on the front desk. So every kid in the class, it was one of those where the class was full. And so every time I would turn to write on the board, when I would turn back around, the kids would have moved their desk back 3 or 4 inches. Well, by the time you work 8 or 10 problems, the kids have moved a good 3 feet. Now I'm having to move further each time. And so the back of the room is completely wall to wall with kids now. And I have not yet realized that what they were doing, because they were working, that one wound up being quite funny, because they wound up, a good 3 or 4 feet, and I was moving, I was having to walk 3 or 4 feet to get to my book, and it never dawned on me. I was just in the moment, and it never really dawned on me that that's what they were doing. And that was pretty funny. Of course, there's the things that they did from time to time that were, came in one day to a classroom full of crickets. So somebody had taken a fishing, one of those little cylinders that you put crickets in when you're going fishing, had filled it full of crickets and let those go in my classroom. That was pretty funny. Another time they took the guts out of one of those musical Christmas cards. And so every time, they taped the back to the back of my desk, and then the front of it they taped to the back of the drawer. So every time I would pull my drawer open, Happy Birthday would play. So that was another one of those pranks that I, and that about does it for the pranks the Prankster's Delight for today.
Teacher tells a story untold, and in the classroom hearts lift like gold. Leadership tough, strong, and bold, lead the way, break the mold. School halls echo, dreams get caught, fighting for the lessons taught. Inspire fighter skills we sought, lead the way, what you've got. Lead the way so they all see, paths uncharted, breaking free. Guide the minds and let them be, lead the way with what you've got. Lead the way so they all see, paths uncharted, breaking free. Guide the minds, let them be, leaders born through you and me. Challenges come, storms rage high, but in your eyes they see the sky. Reshape futures, give it a try, lead the way, don't deny. In the struggle, standing tall, building up, don't let them fall. Wisdom shared through every call, lead the way, you got it all. Lead the way so they all see, paths uncharted, breaking free. Guide the minds and let them be, lead the way with what you've got.
So our leadership tidbit for the day, and I want to leave each of the Teacher Tales podcast, I want to end with a little leadership tidbit. So the leadership tidbit that I would like to share today, and it's really, really, really simple. It's one of my favorite all-time stories when I think about leadership and I think about examples of leadership. I think about home plate in baseball. Now, every person in the world knows what home plate looks like. Every person in the world knows what a ball and a strike is. What's the lesson about home plate? Well, even in 2024, as things have changed so much in the 30 years that I've been teaching, even in 2024, home plate is still 17 inches wide. Let that sink in for just a second. Home plate, since the beginning of time, has been 17 inches wide. Everybody knows, and it doesn't matter what level of baseball you play. The five-year-olds hitting T-balls, home plate under the T-ball stand is 17 inches. Coach pitch baseball, is the home plate is still 17 inches. And so in order for it to be a ball or a strike, it has to go across the plate in the zone. And everybody knows what a ball and a strike looks like. Now, what does that have to do with anything leadership related? 17 inches is the standard for a baseball, for home plate in a baseball game. It's the standard. It doesn't change. It doesn't. So a guy walks up there that's 6 feet tall, the home plate is still 17 inches wide. A guy walks up there that's 5'9", is still 17 inches wide. Now, the height of the strike zone, of course, changes with the height of the batter, but the width of the baseball of home plate never changes. And that's hard. That is a difficult thing for teachers in 2024. It's a difficult thing for educators, for educational administrators, instructional leaders to understand that it's okay to have a standard. It's okay to have some parameters that do not change. 17 inches is home plate. Throw the ball across it between in that zone, and it's a ball. I mean, it's a strike. Outside of the zone, it's a ball. If we can understand that in baseball, we can understand that in education. The standard has to be the standard, and it has to be the same every single time in order for it to remain a standard. We can't go up there and have a... In education, it has been very difficult over the last few years to maintain the 17-inch home plate rule, not because anybody's really trying to change baseball. The analogy is they're trying to change the rules on what is right, what's wrong, what's male, what's female, what's this and what's that, and we want to make it specialized for every single person. And in 2024, not the most popular belief in the world, but it is okay. As a matter of fact, you'll be rewarded for having standards. It may take a minute for you to get rewarded, but you will be rewarded for having standards and sticking to it. Have a good day. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Teacher Tales. Come back next week. We will have another episode.